that Crowley, since the early part of the war, had been a prominent writer for a pro-German publication called The Fatherland, which was edited by a fellow by the name of George Sylvester Viereck. And Viereck was a German-American, passionately devoted to Berlin's cause, and indeed he had hired Crowley to write quite obviously a rather violent anti-British propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ord was a little interested in this. But eventually, as the inquiry went further, the one thing in this whole file that jumped out at me that I didn't expect to find, something I wasn't looking for, and I knew that Crowley later had made these allusions to when he was pressed about, writing this propaganda during the war and being a traitor to Britain, he would almost angrily retort that, well, really, I was serving Britain. I was working for king and country.
Mm-hmm.
And most people, I think, had dismissed that either as just, a kind of tired old traitor, fantasizing, or that at least exaggerating it. No one had really looked into that, and I didn't expect to find anything different. But here was a case of where Ord was literally warned off. And the key element in this was the statement that, you get this from sources in New York, inside the New York State Bureau of Investigation, in another agency, and the Department of Justice, that Crowley was an employee of the British government.
Ah, interesting.
And that the consulate knew what he was doing.
Uh-huh.
They knew about his writing for the German magazines, and basically leave him alone.
Not to worry. All right. Stand by, Dr. Spence, if you would. We'll be right back. Aleister Crowley, this is an amazing historical find, all of this data put together in an extraordinary book, and we'll continue in just a minute with Secret Agent 666. Okay, right back with Secret Agent 666 and Dr. Richard Spence. He is the, again, chair and professor of history at the University of Idaho. This is an amazing look at history. Go ahead with your story. So was this fellow Ord, by the way, the fellow who Ford Ord was named after?
No, I don't think so.
All right.
Was just a fairly minor officer in the U.S. Army at the time.
Okay. Well, he was,
go ahead.
I was going to say, he was told to leave Mr. Crowley alone. Everything was just fine, not to worry. Okay.
He didn't know quite what to make out of the report. I think at one point it includes, I wonder if Crowley isn't somehow double-crossing. If the British think that he's working for them, maybe he's double-crossing them. But nonetheless, he ceased any further. There's no, nothing happened to Crowley, which is a common pattern as it goes through. I mean, one way to sort of move ahead on this is that there's no question. I mean, Crowley was very actively involved in advancing German propaganda in the U.S. throughout the war. And then, in fact, stayed in the U.S. actually until the end of 1919. So, others could argue also shirked his entire duty to England, was out of the country during that period. And when he returned to Britain, At the very end of 1919, just around Christmas, you'd assume that Scotland Yard or MI5 or any number of other agencies would be interested in him.
Yeah.
Nothing happens to him. This is one of the interesting things about him. For all of his evil reputation, deserved or undeserved, for all of the crimes that various people allege to him, he's never arrested for anything in Britain. He never falls afoul of the law. But the worst that ever happens to him is that he goes bankrupt in the 1930s.
Gee.
Even then, he gets bailed out somehow.
Mm-hmm. Well, the handwriting is all over the wall. I get it. Sure. Yeah. All right. Well, let me go back to Lusitania. I don't want to leave that one. Tell us what that was about and the year and all of that.
Well, I think is, again, as many of your readers, I mean, your listeners probably already know, but if they don't, that the Lusitania, there's sort of two great maritime disasters, I guess, in the 20th century. And one is the Titanic, and the other one, slightly less well-known, is the torpedoing of the Lusitania, which was a big canard liner, the pride of really the British merchant fleet that was sunk off the coast of Ireland on its way from New York to Liverpool in May of 1915. That was an incident because there were over 100 Americans who were killed when the ship went down that almost brought the U.S. into the war against Germany, and it certainly played a very important role in turning, if not American public opinion, certainly the opinion of the Wilson administration decidedly against Germany. And I think from that point there was an almost inexorable slide of the U.S. into the war. So one way to put it is that it was an immense PR disaster for the Germans, from which it was a black eye in the view of the American government and public from which they never recovered. And in that sense, you always have to think of the inverse. If it was an immense PR disaster for the Germans, it meant that it was a great PR victory for the British.
Cheap price to play for that much juice for the mill. The German U-boat U-20 did the sinking, and one wonders ultimately what happened to the captain of that, if he was later years, if he survived the war, aware of his, gee, if I hadn't done that, maybe.
I don't know. I think I'm going to have to sort of scratch. I think he managed to survive the war, Captain Schwiegert.
1,200 died in that sinking, as I recall. And
I lost you there for just a moment.
1,200 people died in the sinking of that ship. Look it up on the internet. It's a big boat. It's a damn near a Titanic-sized vessel.
Yeah. One of the things the British had done at the very beginning of the war was to try to turn the Lusitania into an auxiliary cruiser, that is to list it as an auxiliary warship. And one of the ideas in doing that was to actually mount guns on it. And in this period, this sort of submarines had to attack. They spent most of their time on the surface, and they were quite vulnerable to merchant ships.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the ideas about mounting guns on the ship, it would be an easy way to destroy slow-moving subs. Somebody who had some sense ended up deciding that, you know, this huge, slow ocean liner really isn't cut out to be any kind of auxiliary cruiser. It's not fast enough, and mostly it's just a gigantic target, and we'd just be, you know. Furthermore, if we put guns on it, the Germans would be absolutely legitimate in sinking it.
Of course.
And therefore, we couldn't really do that and use it as a liner. So they continued to use it as a liner, and it plied the New York to Liverpool route. One of the things they did use it for was to carry war material.
They certainly did.
Usually they would try to do things like, they would be unloaded shell casings. And so one of the argument being is that, well, you know, they're just brass casings.
Plausible deniability. Yeah.
Yeah. But nonetheless, they were war material, and thus, legally, the argument goes, the Germans actually did have a right to sink it because it was carrying war material in its hold. But still, it was with 1,200 people dead.
Not to blow the horn for the Germans, but we have to take a break. But they certainly did make it quite clear that the ships in the area were targets, and the British knew this, and it was no big secret.
Not only did the Germans warn people getting on the Lusitania in New York. Interestingly enough, so did the British.
Ah, yes. Well, I'm not surprised. All right, we'll come back and maybe get a little glimpse of how Mr. Crowley played a role in that issue and others. Again, this is a remarkable new book on the history platform, and I love history as it really happened. I guess they could call you, Dr. Spence, a revisionist, couldn't they? In a way.
Yeah.
Well, we'll come back to that. Okay, in just a couple minutes, we'll continue with Dr. Richard Spence.